Hello and welcome back to the Ice World Podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier and this episode will conclude Series 4, a series that started with interviewing two pilots flying the first planes down from Canada to kickstart the science season at Rothera, and will be concluding with how work in the Antarctic kept its momentum across the summer season with support from a very special collection of moving vehicles. Think an ice train. Today, I have two guests with me to discuss these moving platforms, which support Antarctic fieldwork, known to those working at the British Antarctic Survey as the Tractor Traverse. This is a series of moving vehicles and containers which tour Antarctica and drop crucial fuel supplies and science equipment around the continent. The Traverse recently concluded its annual grand tour of Antarctica, and I spoke to Nick Withy and Rory Fleet not long after they arrived back in the UK to talk about their experience and to hear what it's like to live and breathe the Traverse every day across a four-month period. Now let's get started with some introductions from Nick and Rory.
I'm Nick Withy. I've got the grand title of the Traverse Vehicles Engineering Manager.
Amazing. And how long have you been working at the British Antarctic Survey?
I've just completed my third season now.
Wow, impressive. And you are fresh back from Antarctica. How long have you been back in the UK?
We've been back 3 weeks now, finally just recovered.
So hot off the press. And Rory, thank you very much for joining us. What about you? When did you get back from Antarctica?
So I got back on the 11th of February, something like that.
So okay, we've been so just back over a month.
Yeah.
Amazing. And what's your brief history of Antarctica, Rory? You've been around the block for a while.
So my first trip down was in 2011. I wintered at Halley, the last winter is at Halley 5. I had a few years off, and then I was back with BAM Nuttalls, the engineering contractors with the Antarctic Improvement Programme. And then I've come and done a season with Nick on the Traverse this season.
So this is your first season on the Traverse. Nick, was Rory well-behaved?
He was tremendous. We went through a hell of a lot of stuff this season, but I couldn't have asked for a better man by my side.
Nick, what does a Traverse manager actually mean?
Well, I am responsible for the whole tractor train setup, so looking after the machines and also the operators and the mechanics that run the Traverse in season. So I do all the background stuff back in Cambridge during the summer, do all the preparation, planning, procurement, and just working out what we're going to do, completing the season. And then when we get down there, I'm basically responsible for the safety and the operation of the Traverse itself.
Can you describe to us the layout of the Traverse? What does that actually mean? Is it like a platform on skis?
Well, basically, the Tractor Traverse, it consists of, we have four piston bully machines. So I don't know if you've been skiing in the past, but the kind of machines you see on the ski slopes doing the snow grooming. So we have four of these machines, and they tow a variety of different sledges, combinations of sledges, to move scientific equipment and fuel around the continent. So we have like a German sledge, which is your typical kind of trailer on skis. And then we've got combinations of big, long 100-foot sheets of plastic that can carry fuel bladders and other cargo on. So it's a big, big train system.
Have you got a rough length for it?
Well, combined together, I suppose you're talking about 140 foot, are you? Rory, would you say?
Yeah, you'd be around there.
Rory, what's your role on this enormous 140-foot train?
So I'm one of the mechanics on the Traverse. So we try and keep the wheels turning, keep the machine serviced and running well. But in with that, we also do a bit of operating and driving the machines. But we'll also have a living caboose, which is like a great big camper van, I suppose, that can house six people with beds, kitchen, stores, plant room, generators. It's like a self-contained mobile home.
Wow. So when you're talking about doing maintenance on the vehicles, these vehicles are constantly moving, or do they have a break so you're able to do maintenance work, or is it maintenance on the go?
So we will schedule in breaks for servicing and repairs. Those vehicles are our prime movers. They're our number one priority, is to keep them moving. So paradoxically, sometimes you've got to stop them to to keep them running.
We are limited what we can do in the field, so we do a hell of a lot of servicing just to keep them as on the go as possible, because we don't have any kind of garage or any space to put them in to do this servicing. So anything we have to do has to be done in the environment outside.
I mean, this is a really interesting perspective. We've heard from mechanics and generator mechanics on the Icefog podcast, and they're always talking about preventative maintenance and how there's no shop. But actually, they're in a much better situation than you guys, because they do, like you said, Nick, have that space. They've got lots of people. They've got time to do it. Whereas you guys are, worst case scenario, you're on the go. You're really isolated. Let's talk about how far away you go. Where does the journey of the Traverse start and end roughly each year?
Well, we get input through via Rotherer generally every season. So our season is dependent on when the planes can get into the field, because all of our machines, our living caboose, everything is just left out in the field each season. So at the end of the season, we'll put it on a big hill. And then hopefully when we come back the following summer, then it's still above ground. Otherwise, we've got to dig it all out.
And have you had to dig it out in past seasons?
We have to dig it out every single season, but the extent of which just depends on where we are. So for the last two seasons now, two of the machines have been involved with the International Thwaites Glacier project. So those machines were supporting science for two seasons. And then this season, it was the job of getting them back and rejoining our traverse, which was 1,200 kilometres, Rory?
Yeah, 1,200K.
About that, give or take.
Depends if you drive in a straight line or not.
Would you say, Rory, that was like the best road trip you've ever done? How was it?
It was the slowest and the longest road trip I've ever done. But yeah, it was a great, great adventure to be dropped off in the middle of nowhere. And you know that you've got 1,200K to go. Not unsupported, because we do get a lot of support, but isolated. It's a great adventure.
How many people were there with you on the road trip?
So from Waste Divide up to where we met the main traverse, there was four of us.
And how long did that take you, and what speed were you moving?
Average.
Average speed.
When we were moving and the ground conditions were good, we could cover maybe 100 kilometres in a day. So over a 10-hour day, we'll say 10 kilometres. But when the ground conditions or the snow conditions were really bad, we may only cover 20 or 30 kilometres a day. So averaging 2 or 3 kilometres an hour.
So when we talk about bad snow conditions, are you talking about sastrugi, like different textures? Maybe people would imagine the snow to be this kind of like very homogenous, the same kind of landscape. But actually the reality is that with the effects of wind and the environment, you get all these hard patches of ice and wind-blown areas.
The hard patches are great. They're a little bit tough on the machine, but you don't get stuck. It's the soft patches that we really struggle with.
Okay, so is it a case when you're moving slow to just stop, dig out the machinery and keep going? How do you get past it?
Yeah, we very often have to put two piston bullies up ahead, one towing another with the load on the back, and then double back and go back for the other load. So it becomes quite a long-winded process. You do three times the mileage that you would double-heading than you would just normal driving.
Sounds incredibly stressful. And also, it's like a complete other world. I imagine that's what it's like if you were to move on to another planet. Like, genuinely, at least with research stations, you can almost forget that you're in Antarctica sometimes. You can sit in the cinema room and, you know, it feels like you could be back at home. But you guys, you're just on this like very, I can imagine, flat landscape for a large part of the time, constantly moving around and getting to these destinations there's no road. So it's not a road trip. But how does navigation work?
So we've got a GPS in each machine that's got a pre-plotted route on. And the route will have been scouted previous with skidoos with ground penetrating radar on, so they go out ahead of us and look for features in the ice and the snow, crevasses or anything that may hinder our progress. And so then that's a safe route plotted, and it's just like following a sat nav in the car. It just gives you a line on the screen, and it tells you how far you've got to go and how far you're away from the line, and you just follow it along.
And Rory, what are the weather conditions roughly most of the time? Have you got good visibility on the surrounding area?
When the weather's really good, it's great. You've got visibility right to the horizon. But as soon as you lose that that contrast and it becomes like a whiteout, it's like driving inside a ping pong ball. You've got no sense of depth, no sense of distance. I was looking out of a tent and trying to work out what the great big rock in the distance was, and it turns out it was a tent peg about 15 feet away from me. You just have no idea of where things are because everything is white.
That sounds like, I think I would feel quite motion sick. Do you get a sense of feeling a little, like a bit of, I don't know, sickness from that weird distortion of not being able to orientate yourself?
It can be quite tiring, especially on the eyes, because you're always trying to focus into a distance that's not there. When you're driving the machines, it's fine, but a few people did get a little bit seasick when they sat in the caboose when we're travelling along, especially over the more lumpy ground.
Or snow sick.
Poor Neil, our field guide, struggled a bit with seasickness.
Whoa!
I always feel as I'm going along that I'm turning left, but you look at the GPS, and if you're going too slow, the GPS just goes round and round in circles, so you can't tell where you're going because you've got no frame of reference. So you've just got to hope for the best.
Roughly how many people constitute the traverse each year?
The general setup is there'll be six people in the caboose, and that is that's our main living accommodation, life support, and that's towed behind four machines. So six people in total usually, but the last season was 13. We had two different cabooses last season, five machines. We actually had seven machines at one point because when we met with the ship, there was another three crew on the ship to help out and take over, you know, driving time and stuff like that.
So is that other traverse, is that right? Am I right in saying it was called the Ghost Traverse, and it was specifically for science and the other one was logistics?
Yes. So the past two seasons, we went out three seasons back and kind of dropped off the two machines. Then they spent two seasons working on the Thwaites Glacier whilst we went around in the background. We're kind of the roadies of Antarctica.
Nick, this is obviously a massively high-pressure job, requires a lot of skills, a lot of organisation. What's your background before working with the British Antarctic Survey? How did you get into this crazy position?
Well, I had a strange route. I spent the last decade working as an overlander for an adventure company. So I used to travel around the world, crossing continents, taking a number of passengers, up to 22 passengers, on a truck across continents. This kind of job seemed like a best fit for me after that. I applied with Bass and this job came up, which seemed ideal.
Rory, how do you feel about your future in the Traverse now you've had your first sample year? And what made you want to go on the Traverse, actually, Rory?
It's just the adventure of it. I always think of it as the closest thing that I'd ever get to old school Antarctic travel, like the likes of Scott and Shackleton, across the interior of Antarctica, whilst they obviously had it much, much tougher and they were much hardier men. I think it's the closest I'll ever get to that kind of adventure.
And what, Rory, did you do before coming into the British Antarctic Survey world? What's your background into this?
My background's been heavy machinery, cranes and lifting equipment. So in between trips to Antarctica, I do some contracting work and engineering contracting. I did a degree in mechanical engineering, so I'd done an apprenticeship as a heavy engineer, heavy fitter, looking after cranes and lifting machinery, and then I went and done a degree in engineering.
And Rory, do you think you will be joining the Traverse for another year running now you've had your first sample of a remote adventure?
Look at him smiling there.
We need to have words, Rory. I'm just about to start recruiting next week.
Yeah, it was a great experience, and I would I'd love to do another trip.
Rory, have you got an extreme mechanics story that you'd like to share with us?
So this season was quite an intense season, getting the machines back from Waste Divide, the Ghost Traverse. Those machines had probably been on continent a little bit longer than Nick would have liked because of ship's relief that didn't happen a few years ago. So they were getting a bit tired, and we did have quite a few mechanical issues on the way back. So our biggest problem, we had a small gearbox in the track fail, which stopped us for a week. And the parts came from Rothera. They flew them in with a Twin Otter and dropped them off to us, and we repaired it and got back going. But it's like the most extreme case of a parts delivery you'll get. It's the same process that you'd use at home, but instead of having a little van drop off your parts and spares, you have a plane come in and do it.
Wow, and it's not an easy job to change a gearbox, I can imagine. Do things freeze? And like using tools and undoing nuts, and I'm obviously not a mechanic, but are those things quite challenging out there?
Very much so. And the most difficult thing to remember is don't put anything on the snow because you'll lose it. Tools and nuts and bolts. And
how many bolts have you put in your lips and regretted it?
Rots.
Wow. And Nick, what's communication like whilst you're on the Traverse? Have you got an internet supply? Are you able to speak to people from home? How do you speak to Cambridge?
Well, things have come on light years even since I started with Bass. So, my first season, you were limited to, you could possibly get like a text email out and that was it. Otherwise, it's satellite phones or HF radio. But all of a sudden now we've got these low Earth orbit satellites. So, internet's amazing now. So we've just got to get to grips with this new form of communication. But it is a game changer for us because I'm able to, as machines and kit gets more complicated, being able to look up something online is absolute, amazing resource because I'm absolutely stuck without it. But unfortunately, when we first got out there, we didn't have the power cable for our satellite dish. So, and that was just at the point where all of my solar had gone down, so I couldn't look up any kind of instruction manuals or anything. So I just had to guess. But once satellite was up and running, then an amazing resource.
Wow! And are you able to have time to speak to people back home as well, friends and family, keep them updated, or is it? You're in another world.
I did do a lot of Instagramming this year, which was new for me, but that's probably the easiest way of getting in touch with people because, to be honest, we were working so many long hours that you don't really want to make a phone call when you get back. You want to go straight to bed.
Yeah, that's true. And Rory, what do you think?
The great thing about Nick's Instagram videos was his were so good, I just shared them and I didn't have to do any myself.
What's it like on the aftermath? So you've put your caboose on the hill, you said goodbye to it, you then come back to Rothera, and is it completely overwhelming? How is it?
We had a busy week when we got back to Rothera. We were trying to sort out all our parts and things for the caboose that we'd sent back, and then it's a mad rush, get all your kit washed and packed away and then get on the flight back to Chile. So I don't think you really have chance to think about it until you get back to Chile and then start flying back up through and you start to decompress a bit. But yeah, it's a busy time at the end of the season.
Nick, how does it feel like for you coming back to station?
Well, I feel like it was a strange season because there was many opportunities for us this year. We met up with the ship, so that was a large complement of crew on board there. So we had a mixture of being very isolated and then around lots of people. But coming back to Rodder, it's just nice to have a few more of your creature comforts. But it does take a while to switch off after such an intense season. So it wasn't until I got home that I really finally managed to get some proper sleep.
Rory, do you think you would maybe look at doing more extreme mechanicking? How does it compare to your experience at Halley when you were working on a station? Are you kind of hooked? I know we talked about maybe you're going to go back to the Traverse.
I don't think there's anywhere more extreme to be doing the job than on the Traverse. I would say it's probably the most remote and isolated place I could ply my trade.
Final question for both of you. What keeps you going back?
It's got to be, like we mentioned before, it's just the adventure and the people. We do have a really good laugh, and it is a great experience.
I think the same for me. It's just that I never had any draw of Antarctica before, because strangely, I don't really enjoy the cold, to be honest. But it does. It's a place that gets under your skin. You know, it is the last frontier, I think. So, you know, just get down there and just have such a challenge. It's great. And it just keep bringing me back, and hopefully Rory.
Subtle hint for the next recruitment campaign. I like it.
It's great to get to share all these ideas and hopefully sow some seeds for some other people to join in the future.
Well, thanks both so much. It's been a really great episode.
Thank you very much, Nadia. It's been great.
If you're the kind of person who thrives on adventure, do check out the job section of the British Antarctic Survey's website. As you never know, you might have a really nice set of skills that BAS are looking for. And if you learned something new when listening today, tell us, and make sure you leave a review on the Iceworld page or wherever you get your podcasts. You have just listened to the last episode concluding Series 4. We will now take a short break and then move on to Series 5. Series 5 will be all about logistics, spanning not only Antarctica, but also the Arctic and Greenland. And due to funding and budget, we will now be changing the structure of this episode from bi-weekly to monthly episodes. Look forward to seeing you next time. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.